In the coming decades, society will orchestrate a relentless, multifaceted campaign to compel men to sacrifice their dignity, resources, and entire lives in pursuit of women who once explicitly rejected them. This social engineering will manifest through a constant barrage of propaganda, subtly and overtly shaming men into becoming providers and protectors for a generation of women who, in their youth, enjoyed absolute freedom to pursue their unfettered desires with a small minority of men. The mechanism is simple but devastatingly effective, operating on multiple levels simultaneously to create a prison from which escape seems impossible. As these women age and face the unvarnished realities of a competitive, expensive world, a world their own mating choices help shape, they will employ every tool of emotional manipulation to rewrite history. They will gaslight relentlessly, claiming they were tricked by societal pressures into choosing transient lovers over stable suitors, conveniently omitting their own agency and preferences during the decades when they had complete freedom to choose differently. The very men they overlooked, dismissed as boring, unexciting, or simply not worthy of attention during their youth, are now expected to feel a chivalrous duty to swoop in, to save these women from the loneliness and economic hardship that follows a life of hedonistic exploration. This expectation comes wrapped in the accusation that their prior exclusion was somehow for their own good, that they needed to mature before they could appreciate what was always available to them. This narrative will be aggressively enforced by cultural and economic systems working in perfect harmony. Media, entertainment, and educational institutions will continuously pump out messaging that frames male independence as a moral failing. Every film, every television show, every news article will reinforce the same basic premise: that good men provide, that real men sacrifice, that authentic masculinity is measured by what a man gives to women who may or may not appreciate him. Men who retain their clarity and refuse this transactional, belated affection will be branded misogynists, incels, or threats to the social order. Their grounded observations that they are being asked to pay for a party they weren't invited to, that they are expected to clean up a mess they had no hand in creating, will be twisted into proof of their unworthiness. Every instinct that tells them to protect their own interests, to value their own time and resources, to demand reciprocity in relationships, will be systematically pathologized. Meanwhile, the economic structure itself will be weaponized against those who resist. Taxes on single, childless men will increase dramatically, framing their solitude as a selfish avoidance of civic duty. The cost of living will be calibrated to make solitary survival nearly impossible, with housing, healthcare, and basic necessities priced assuming dual incomes or institutional support. Urban planning will eliminate spaces where men can gather without female presence. Zoning laws will make communal living arrangements difficult or illegal. The very architecture of cities will be designed to funnel men into relationships and households where they can be effectively monitored and utilized. The goal is to force men into the workforce and domestic sphere alongside women who hold them in contempt, making them cogs in a machine designed to extract their labor and wealth for the benefit of a system that never valued them as anything more than resources to be utilized and discarded when depleted. The underlying reality that fuels this entire apparatus is simple mathematics that no amount of propaganda can truly erase. The small minority of men who received the nearly total mass of available female affection during their youth will not and cannot ensure that every woman thrives in a system that doesn't cater to their specific mating choices. Those desired men have no incentive to provide long-term stability to the many women they briefly enjoyed. And women themselves generally resist sharing the men they truly desire, even when economic realities might suggest that as a practical solution. The result is a growing population of women who, having made their choices freely and without restraint, now find themselves without the security they were implicitly promised by a culture that assured them everything would work out in the end, that their freedom to choose would never come with consequences, that the men they rejected would always be waiting in the wings as a backup plan. Rather than confront this uncomfortable truth, rather than acknowledge that freedom includes the freedom to make mistakes and face consequences, society will double down on demanding that the rejected men step forward. It will be framed as redemption, as maturity, as the right thing to do. Men will be told that their resistance is petty, that holding women accountable for their choices is cruel, that the only honorable path is to open their homes and wallets to those who never wanted them when it counted. The shaming will be constant and inescapable. At work, men will face hostility from female colleagues who sense their refusal to play along. In social settings, they will be excluded and gossiped about. Online, they will be harassed and doxxed. Their families will be turned against them, with mothers and sisters recruited to deliver the same message: that they are failing in their duty, that they are letting everyone down, that they need to just give in and do what's expected. The propaganda will become increasingly sophisticated. Studies will be published showing that single men are unhappy, that married men live longer, that men in relationships earn more money. What these studies will omit, of course, is that correlation is not causation. That the kind of man who can attract and maintain a healthy relationship is already different from the kind who cannot. That forcing men into relationships with women who don't genuinely want them will produce none of the benefits observed in organic partnerships. But nuance has no place in propaganda, and the studies will be presented as definitive proof that resistance is self-destructive. For those who continue to resist, who see through the lies and refuse to participate in their own exploitation, society reserves its most potent weapon: isolation. These men will find themselves increasingly alone, their social circles contracting as friends marry and adopt the prevailing attitudes, their professional opportunities drying up as networking becomes impossible without participating in the required social rituals. They will be talked about constantly, their choices dissected and condemned by people who have never bothered to understand their perspective. Every difficulty they face will be framed as deserved punishment for their refusal to conform. The only viable path to authentic freedom will lie in a radical rejection of this entire construct. Men will seek to escape into the wilderness, relying on advanced exosuit technologies to master harsh environments and on closed-loop agricultural systems to generate abundance in deserts and forests. These technologies will make it possible to live independently, growing food in arid regions using hydroponics and atmospheric water generation, surviving in climates that were once inhospitable through powered exoskeletons that regulate temperature and amplify strength. Solar panels and small-scale nuclear batteries will provide continuous power. 3D printing will allow for the creation of tools and replacement parts. Mesh networks will enable communication between dispersed communities without relying on the monitored infrastructure of the society left behind. This is not mere survivalism, but a deliberate choice to live as any other creature on Earth, free, self-sufficient, and utterly disconnected from a society whose core function has become to use and abuse men for the unreciprocated benefit of those who will never, ever appreciate them. In these autonomous communities, removed from the grids and systems designed to trap them, men will finally experience what was denied them in the civilized world: the simple dignity of being valued for what they actually contribute, rather than being endlessly shamed for what they refuse to give. They will hunt, build, create, and live according to natural rhythms, rather than the manufactured emergencies of a social order that sees them only as resources to be extracted. The technology for this exodus is already emerging. Advanced exoskeletons, originally developed for military and industrial applications, can be adapted for wilderness living, multiplying human strength and endurance while providing protection from elements. Closed-loop agricultural systems, refined for space exploration and vertical farming, can produce abundant food in previously barren environments. Atmospheric water generators can pull clean water from thin air, even in desert conditions. Small-scale manufacturing through 3D printing means communities are not dependent on supply chains. Drone technology enables hunting, foraging, and defense without constant human exertion. These are not futuristic fantasies, but existing technologies waiting to be combined and deployed by those desperate enough to seek true freedom. The question that will haunt the society left behind is whether this exodus represents failure or evolution. For the men who leave, it will be freedom beyond measure. The freedom to determine their own purpose, to build communities based on genuine mutual respect rather than coercive obligation. To live without the constant weight of expectations they never agreed to carry. For those who remain trapped in the machine, forever chasing approval they will never receive, forever sacrificing for appreciation that will never come, it will be a constant reminder that some chains can only be broken by walking away entirely. And in the wilderness, under skies unpolluted by the constant glow of cities designed to cage them, these men will finally breathe. They will finally know peace. They will finally understand what it means to live for themselves, rather than for a society that sees them only as tools to be used and discarded. The propaganda will continue without them. The shaming will persist. The economic pressures will mount for those who stay behind. But in the forests and deserts, in the mountains and along remote coastlines, a new way of being human will emerge. One based not on obligation and guilt, but on freedom and mutual respect. And that, perhaps, is the greatest threat of all to the system they left behind.